Welcome to the Mindfully Masculine Podcast with Charles and Dan, where we take a conscious, holistic, and direct approach to men's relationships, health, and self-improvement. To join the conversation, give us a rating and a review, and contact us with questions or suggestions at mindfullymasculine@gmail.com.
Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm well. Had a good weekend and a good end of last week at PodFest. How about you?
Yeah, same. I really enjoyed PodFest. Got some good information out of there. I think I brought home a head cold though from, you know, a lot of crowded rooms with a lot of people sitting close to each other. And I think I brought something back. But so far, it feels like just a minor head cold. I'm not too worried that I've got COVID or a flu or anything like that. So knock on wood, that'll be the way it works out, and I'll be free and clear in a day or two.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm staying drugged up on all the good over-the-counter cold medicines and stuff, and that seems to be helping. Let's see, what else is on my list to talk to you about today? Did have a... Yeah, oh, things that go well. Things that yeah, are going say. Well. Yeah, yeah.
What's going so well
the, for the big
you?
Thing was yesterday, while I was dealing with my cold symptoms, runny nose, stuffy head, those really... A little bit of a scratch in my throat. I still had to walk 10,000 steps to get my to continue on in my step bet challenge. And similar to a few months ago when I tweaked my back a little bit deadlifting, you know, I tried to, you know, lay in bed and take it easy for about a week and hope that it would get better. And then finally I just got frustrated. I said, that's it. I'm going to start using my body as if I wasn't injured and see what happens. And I felt so much better after I did that. And then yesterday, the same thing. I was like, ooh, to get over this cold fast, I should probably just lay in bed and take some NyQuil and piss the day away. And instead of that, I decided, no, I'm going to go out and I'm going to take a walk as if I was fine. And I was glad I did because I definitely felt better for taking that action. And, you know, I'm not saying this really translates to much of anything else. You know, if you've got stage 4 pancreatic cancer, don't just say, I'll just walk it off. But for a minor tweaked back or a head cold, yeah, just don't give in to that. Oh, the other thing that worked out well for me in the same space was, you know, a minor inconvenience of a cold is usually enough to kick me off of good eating habits, because nothing feels better than some real sugary ginger ale and, you know, some crackers and some loaf of bread from the bakery and stuff like that. But I decided, nope, this time I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep eating right, even though I don't feel great. And so far, so good. I've just been, you know, sticking to mostly veggies and meat. But I have indulged a little bit more in fruit, like for whatever reason, just some blueberries or some strawberries just take away that kind of gross feeling you have in your mouth from when you're sick and you're having to blow your nose and cough all the time. And so I've gone a little heavy on the berries, but boy, could go much worse than berries when you're trying to do no sugar, no grain.
Congratulations, man. That's not easy to do.
Thanks. Now that I told you and all the listeners, and I have to stick with it for at least another day.
Yeah, what really concerned me was not the crackers or the ginger ale, but you say you buy a loaf of bread.
Oh,
to
yeah,
feel better when you're sick.
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah, if I have a cold for 4 or 5 days, I will just go through 1 to 2 loaves of not like Wonder Bread, like some good bread from like the Publix bakery, like Mountain Bread or sourdough or something like that, and then just bread and butter is all I'll eat for a few days while I'm feeling sick.
All right.
Do you recommend against that?
I'm gonna give you some advice you didn't ask for, which is
please.
That's gonna keep your cold going a lot longer than it normally would Listen, man, I know we talked about it briefly too, and I don't want to get on the soapbox about, you know, we talk about gluten and everybody's, you know, oh, I have a gluten sensitivity or I'm gluten sensitive. Yeah, most people are. It's because it damages the lining of our gut, that type of the gluten protein. So whether you see and feel an actual sensitivity or you don't, that's not something our bodies are meant to be eating. It causes damage. And then we eat other food that then gets into our blood system because basically the gluten has then destroyed the cells, the barrier of our intestinal lining. And so stuff that gets into that shouldn't be in our bloodstream gets into our bloodstream. And so even foods that really don't normally you think of as allergenic, they actually do cause allergies. You know, you can get congested, little things, or you could get that bad as where you've got incredible cramps, you know, celiac disease, things like that. So, you know, do your body a favor of avoid gluten at all costs if you can, and much better choices with the blueberries. So that's great. Since I've done that, since I've been conscious of that, I mean, I used to get, and I speak from experience, I used to get really bad, really bad bowel movements from just almonds and broccoli and, you know, chicken breast, things that, like, fairly healthy things that you really don't associate with allergies. I took an allergy test. All these things came up for me, including avocados. And I just thought that was very strange. Nobody in my family had any of these issues. I was just a little bit more conscious of my gluten. I healed my gut with some glutamine, and some basic powders. I stayed away from the foods that were causing me to for a few months. Afterwards, I'm good now. I don't have a problem. And every once in a while, I can have, you know, a slice of bread where I have a little gluten here and there. It doesn't bother me. It's just when we're all eating, it's put into everything. Wheat. Is put on, you didn't realize potato chips. You didn't think, well, why would they put wheat on potato chips? Well, part of the coating is actually kind of addictive. And so you know, the whole Lay's, I bet you can't eat just one. The reason is because that wheat powder that they sprinkle on there makes it more tasty and our bodies react to that as a chemical and it actually encourages hunger. So it's, and in that wheat is the gluten. So it's in stuff you don't even realize. So that's why it's really difficult to kind of get it out of your diet. But, you know, just go for a little while
The first time I did no sugar, no grain, you know, my breakfast every day was either bacon and eggs or a good omelet. And the closest restaurant to my house was an IHOP or International House of Pancakes, as we used to call it. And their omelets were always so much fluffier than everybody else's. So I thought, you know, hey, that's kind of weird. Maybe they just put some cream in there or something in with the eggs. But
what's the secret?
They say right there on the menu, they put some of their pancake batter in the eggs for their omelets. Pancake batter.
I had a roommate shortly after college who actually was a general manager at an IHOP. And that's when I first heard about it. And I was just like, why would you? And he's like, it makes a difference why they fluff up and they're so beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the batter.
So yeah, that's something to keep in mind. You don't know what, you know, most diet plans that are a big change from what you're currently used to are effective if you can stick to them. And the big reason is because for most of them, you have to start cooking at home a lot more than you already have been. So whether you're doing, you know, Atkins or keto or paleo or even a low fat diet, if part of the deal is you have to cook food at home instead of just picking up already made stuff at the grocery store or eating on the run, then, you know, you'll lose weight on pretty much any of them if you start cooking all of your things from home at home from, you know, just full ingredients.
Yeah, absolutely. Single ingredient foods, and it's going to be a lot easier to track when you're also making it at home too, you know, versus all the other little things that they put into. So you don't know what kind of, how much butter they used, how much oil they used, you know, in preparing your meals. I mean, they can tell you, yeah, we use this kind of oil, this kind of butter, but, you know, even the chef may not remember and is going to use a different amount every single time. Think about when you're cooking, you know, if you're not, you know, really aware of what you're doing and measuring out the scoop or measuring things out, you know, the chef is probably fairly consistent, you know, but still, it could be a different chef that day. Could be somebody subbing in for the chef. Once in a while, that happened when I worked in a restaurant. They'd bring up some of the pantry cooks that just prepared the sous chefs, and they'd end up cooking. And so you don't know. You really don't.
Yeah, it's definitely when you can eat at home, eat at home. When you can't, then just try to stick to simple food that's as simple as you can as you can find and you can manage. That's your best bet.
Yeah.
If you're looking to change anything, I mean, if you're cool with the way things are and, you know, you're enjoying life, and then by all means stay the course. But, yeah, if you're looking to make changes, that's a good place to start. All right. Let's talk about this stuff on our face. Well, on mine mostly. This facial hair. let's talk about
dirt.
Facial hair.
We talk about the dirt on my chin and I my never, nose.
Boy, you every time as a young man you try to grow some facial hair. Just yeah, all the jokes that people feel like they have to make to you about you forgot to wash your face this morning, stuff like that was just endless.
What are you talking about? I get that as an old man. I get that as an old man too. What are you talking about, man? Young man.
I'll still get it occasionally, and the chronic Stop. Disease of
Come on.
People who aren't funny trying to be funny. I don't know that we'll ever find a cure for that. All right, so here's what our book Atomic Attraction has to say in the chapter "To Shave or Not to Shave." So he makes it pretty clear that in a multitude of studies, women typically find that facial hair has a positive effect on a man's appearance. That when looking at pictures of men with heavy stubble or a beard, that they are rated by women, at least women who participate in these surveys, which we can talk about the methodology of the surveys, but they're rated as more masculine and attractive, as well as healthier. I'm sorry, masculine and assertive, as well as healthier and more attractive. He cites a study of 351 women, which admittedly is a little light when it comes to a selection, and we also don't know culturally where they're from, what their ages are, or anything like that. But mm-hmm. He's willing to put it in his book, so I'm willing to repeat it. 351 women found that heavy stubble is the most attractive facial hair a man can grow, which he defines as around 10 days worth of growth. I don't know. For some people, 10 days worth of growth would be very light stubble. And for others, 10 days worth of growth would be an actual beard. So your mileage may vary. But heavy stubble seems to be the thing that most women find attractive, because it's and the good news for us is it's one of the easiest looks to cultivate, because all you have to do is get a set of clippers and, experiment with either a half guard or a number one guard and just go over your whole face with it instead of shaving every day. I would recommend, keeping the area down around your neck and throat cleaner, because that, when that gets too long, unless it's to support a full long beard, This part on me at least could get very kind of just dirty looking. It gets a little, it looks like, oh, you haven't shaved in a while. Where, if you make a line for your beard right around here, and then just grow your stubble, on your cheeks, your upper lip and your chin and not all the way down, it does look like it looks a little deliberate, which is, kind of counterintuitively what women seem to respond to. They want it to be a little deliberate, but also look a little wild. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Same thing with the hair on your head, for sure.
Yeah. True. Very true. All right. So facial hair is not only.
I think they just like when it comes to back hair. I think they just want it wild. Just kind of coming out over the top. That's what I've heard in the studies that I've conducted.
Yeah. That reminds me of a joke I heard a long time ago. Why do us Italian guys wear necklaces so much? So we know where to stop shaving.
I haven't heard that. That's good.
Yeah. All right. So in this chapter, we have case study number two, a fellow named Gary. And we don't need to go into Gary's I think there's less to learn from Gary's case study than the last one that we did, so we don't need to cover it in quite as much detail. But here's the deal with Gary. So Gary was a fairly clean-cut guy. He had a good job, a good look that at least he was happy with, and he just didn't have the luck with the ladies that he wished that he did. And so one day Gary gets sick. I think he caught pneumonia and was kind of just out of commission for a while, lost some weight, basically couldn't get out of bed for a few weeks. And then he came back to his friend group after that, and he hadn't shaved. And so he had, a little something going on with his facial hair, and he immediately started getting compliments that he looked cool, that he looked like a badass, blah, blah, blah. And he said that he got some attention, or the study says that he got some attention from women that he wasn't used to. So again, the root of this, similar to, you know, the root of a muscular body, and the reason that these things are attractive is they do translate to the presence of testosterone. But as the book points out, you know, some guys who are used to cultivating a very clean cut image can be worried that, you know, no, I'll look rough, I'll look lazy, I'll look disheveled, I'll look like a bad guy if I let my facial hair grow. Again, I don't know of a single employer anymore these days, you know, unless you're like a TV news anchor or something like that. But even Disney has relaxed their requirements for their prohibitions on facial hair. So, you know, growing a cultivated but stubbly look is something that I can't imagine a job, even a very conservative field, like, you know, some things we traditionally think of like finance or law. You're not going to set your career back or your status among your coworkers back by sporting a little bit of stubble. Again, especially if you take care to mind the lines, you know, lines on your cheek, lines on your chin. So if you're looking for a way to shake things up and maybe see if you get some different results when it comes to your social interactions, definitely give that a try. If you've been sporting the clean cut look for a while and you're open to seeing how something else might work for you, I would say give a little facial hair a try. And you know, you can go, you don't have to just go stubble. If you want to grow a goatee or a mustache or a full beard, then by all means you can try that too. But just know that at least in the work that he's done and the studies that he cited, the heavy stubble is the shortcut to being the most attractive for the majority of men.
So I just wanted to get your take on this, Charles. For lengthwise, let's say we want to go for a beard and we have the capability to grow a beard, unlike myself, how long do you think we can go where it's still looking attractive and still showing some sort of signs of higher testosterone levels and yeah. versus looking like ZZ Top? Now, yeah. you know, the ZZ Top beard, I think if these were just two guys sitting on a bench somewhere in a park and weren't famous rock stars, I don't know if people would be as into it as, you know, into at least them as they might be. But I'm just curious. I see a lot of guys who have rather long beards and they're not exactly, I would say, kempt. They're a little scraggly here and there. And yeah. I'm not a fair judge of that because that's, you know, I that's not the kind of look that I like, but and with a couple people that I've talked, a couple ladies I've talked to, it's not something that they've liked. But I'm just curious from your experience, is bigger better when it comes to the beard?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, I would say that there is a lot of, I mean, I have friends that, you know, their goal is to just grow it as long and as full as they possibly can, and you know, they have not stated a high priority for trying to attract members of the opposite sex. So I don't know exactly what their interactions were. I mean, there will be some women that are super into it. But again, like I said, I just re-listened to the episode that went live today. You know, we're talking about advice that is applicable to the widest variety of men to attract the widest range of women, right? So I would say you can go from short to long doesn't really matter, but here's one thing to keep in mind. The longer you grow your beard, the tougher job you're going to have to groom it in a way that it looks like it's being actively kept up. You know what I mean?
Great
Where
point.
If you're growing a short beard, then, you know, and I've done this. I've thrown like a number three or a number four guard on and just done my whole face with that. And that looks like, okay, this is a guy who keeps a short beard. But the longer it gets to get those lines looking like it's being like you're putting time and effort into maintaining it, you might be really good at doing that yourself. I watched plenty of YouTube videos of guys who could just stand in the mirror and use clippers and scissors and combs and they could get it looking really, really good. But I would say if having a lengthy beard is your goal, then you should probably assume you're going to have to spend some time finding and going to a decent barber who can keep those lines looking tight for you. And, you know, the thing is, sort of the catch 22 is if you're good at growing a long, full beard, your hair probably grows pretty fast. And, you know, for a good beard trim in the Orlando area, where you and I live, you know, it's hard to imagine you're getting that done for less than $25, including the tip. So if you're going every week or every other week, because like I said, your hair grows really fast, you know, you're talking about spending $50 to $100 a month to keep that long beard looking like it's being maintained. Now, there is a possibility that you could go for a while and watch what they do and how they do it and then try to do it yourself and maybe pick up some of that knowledge. That's a possibility as well. But I would say that if full beard is your game and you want to, you know, keep it maintained, then go with a short to medium length one where, again, you just put on the same number guard and just do your whole face with that. And then, you know, use a razor to keep the lines nice and clean.
So from your experience talking to, you know, being friends with a number of different women, and your experience, you know, dating different women, how many of them prefer a beard that requires that much work? Do they say, hey, this is, I you know, this guy is so hot because he's got this really long beard? Or, you know, have you heard anything one way or the other? Just curious.
Yeah, I did have, I did get feedback from a couple of women when I switched from a fairly long beard back to stubble that they liked the beard better than the stubble. Their favorite look for me or on me was very short hair up top and a long beard.
Wow. Okay.
So that's one piece of advice that I got. The other thing is that the longer your hair is, the easier it is to condition it and keep it from being prickly. And women's faces are pretty sensitive, as are other parts.
Yeah.
And so having sharp little wires rubbing against them or sticking them it may not be the most fun. So that's a situation where longer might be better, or, you know, certainly completely recently clean shaven would be better too.
But, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I know I've heard that too, because mine is fairly short. And so I need to regularly use a leave-in conditioner to keep it soft, to keep it softer. And otherwise it is scratchy for sure. So yeah, it's definitely something to think about.
All right. Well, since, you know, that last point that I made has definitely earned us the explicit check mark on this episode, let's get into penis size. All right, so here's a fun topic to obsess over and single-handedly ruin your own life with. This is the data does not support worrying about your size down there as much as you may already be doing, and certainly as much as some guys definitely do. Here's what we can say, and again, this is, you know, just in the realm of going gray or the realm of going bald. The problem is often, almost all of the time, not what's going on with your body. The problem is what's going on with your mind about what's going on with your body. Mm-hmm. And your size down there is usually, and we'll talk about this, except for a very small minority of men, your size is not going to be an issue of concern or an issue that makes you less attractive. The way you think about it and the way you act as a result of it is going to be the thing that gets in your way.
I mean, let's be honest with you, with everybody here. That's one of the few things that we really can't change, or at least not very easily at all, about ourselves. So what are our alternatives here in terms of the effectiveness of, you know, our penis size basically out in the world? And that's really going to be a lot more determined based on basically what you said, which was our thoughts about it, how we are coming across and how it's affecting our interactions. That is going to be a lot more critical. And that's what we have a lot more control over as well.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I remember just a few weeks ago where Greta Thunberg and Andrew Tate got into it on Twitter, and you know, she accused him of small dick energy in the way that he was behaving, which I found interesting that she got such a positive response to that, because it seems like, you know, we've gotten to the point where the one physical characteristic that's beyond your control that you can't do anything about changing, that's still completely fine to make fun of somebody about, is the size of their penis. And anything else, that, you know, even making fun of a guy because he's short, we all kind of agree. It's like, okay, you can, you know, that's not a great thing to do, right?
Yeah.
But you can make, if a guy's acting in a way that you don't like, you can accuse him of small dick energy. And, you know, guys on the, you know, guys on the sideline who actually do have a medical condition like micropenis, they have to just sit there on the sideline thinking, okay, what did I do to get hit with this shrapnel? Why is this about me all of a sudden?
Right. Yeah.
And,
yeah,
and so, yeah, it goes back to what you and I talked about a few weeks ago, Dan. I find it a colossal waste of time to take either pride or shame in things about yourself that you didn't do anything to earn or set yourself back from. It's just, you know, your eye color, how tall you are, much of your cognitive capabilities. These are things that happen to you as a result of luck. These are not things that you often do something to earn. So whether they're good or bad, or they work for you or against you, being proud of them or ashamed of them is not the best use of your time.
Right. And, you know, when I hate to go back to the schoolyard, but really sticks and stones here, right? This is, yeah. She has no idea how big his, you know, his Johnson right. is, you know, and, you know, even if it was small or whatever, she was right about that, then honestly, who cares? Because you know what? There's so many people out there. Everybody has so many preferences. Some ladies might actually prefer a smaller size penis because of the way it fits better for them. You know, it's, you can't say, you know, I really, oh boy, I just used one of our filler words there. I really, you know, okay. We're trying to, yeah. Just for everybody out there, we realized how many times we say, you know, so we apologize in advance for all the times you've heard us say that.
Yeah. And I've got a few other ones on my list that I need to work on too. So it's not just that one.
Right. So as I've gotten older, I've realized I really don't care what anybody says when it comes to an opinion about me or anybody else, because it really, let them think that there's always going to be somebody out there who finds, you know, whatever you have insecurities about, they're going to find it attractive. You just may not have met that person yet.
True.
But if you look at, at all of the crazy things about porn, all the different fetishes that are out there, it doesn't matter. You could, you know, things that are absolutely, you wouldn't be able to even think of or dream up of yourself. Somebody else has thought about that and probably are attracted to it.
Yeah. There's some sort of, a law or razor, like, you know, Occam's razor or Hanlon's razor, one of those things that basically says, if there's a thing you can think about in the context of sexuality, if you can even imagine it, then there's a person out there who can't get off without that one thing, no matter how crazy it might be. And so, yeah, there's definitely a matter of, yeah, whatever you've got going on, that will work for someone. It's just a matter of finding that someone. But for the vast majority of us, and when I say majority of us, the middle 50% of guys. So think of, you know, from the 25th to 75th percentile, the middle of us in the middle, 50%, our size is within a centimeter of each other.
That blew my mind. And this was a study for what, 15,000 people that 50, they yeah, did this?
15,521 across all continents, all over the world. The middle 50% is within a centimeter of each other.
And look at a ruler, guys. Take a look at a ruler and look at how small a centimeter is. And tell me that, you know, you can't stretch it a little bit longer if you wanted to. Or
I happen to have one right here.
Or you know, when it's cold outside, you get the Costanza, you know, it was shrinkage, Jerry.
Yeah, yeah. So the space
absolutely. Between,
I have small hands, and which we'll learn does not correlate to anything. I have small hands, and yeah. that is the length of 1 centimeter right there. So it is very right. it's very very little. And then okay, so what if we go a little bit more into the extremes? What we've learned about that is that only 5% of participants in this study had one larger than 6.3. And less than 5% had one smaller than 3.9. So even the extreme 5% on either end still was not all that different from the average size.
You know, and I think I'm going to, wow, I just realized I lead with, you know, I'm going to have to stop that. What is interesting to me is we hear, I think, a lot about the damage that porn does in terms of relationships for men. And in some ways, I can see that for setting unrealistic expectations for the way women look. However, do we ever think that some of the men that we end up watching on porn who are in that top 5%, we don't, that is subconsciously probably also programming us to think, hey, we should be the size of these porn stars. And whether we think about it or not, it is still something we have seen from time to time. And it does get implanted in our subconscious at some level, obviously some more than others, but that's something to think about here when it comes to pornography habits is
sure.
Just kind of be aware of all of the information and all the programming that we're getting here. It's not just, you know, creating these unrealistic expectations for the way women look.
No, definitely not. We've alluded to that before with, you know, the way our biggest movie stars who are now men in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and they're walking around with, you know, 6% body fat and huge pecs, huge arms, and, ripped abs. And, you know, a lot of guys watch those movies, probably, you know, slightly more guys than women watch those movies and think, all right, well, I guess that's what I've got to be. And they don't realize, you know, the time and money that it takes to get yourself into that condition and genetics too. I mean, although I suspect, you know, with enough time, money, and pharmaceuticals, most of the genetic limitations can probably be overcome. Oh, yeah. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah.
Oh, but, absolutely.
And with the third leg of that, still being very important, pharmaceuticals.
Right. Yeah. Genetics really, Charles, I don't think that really plays much of a factor until you're doing some sort of comparison between people. Right. So right. If you're going to professional bodybuilders at that point, right, they're all doing similar amounts of pharmaceuticals and working out and eating, right, not that different from each other. At that point, that's where I think, and the genetics are going to come into play. And it's kind of like the same thing if you've ever gone shopping for a television where you are, you know, like a old school Circuit City or Best Buy, and you're looking at a TV and like, oh, this has got a beautiful picture, until maybe you take a step back and you compare that next to the Sony TV and you're like, right, oh, I had no idea. But for you, there's no difference when you weren't comparing it to something else.
Yeah. I noticed that when I was buying my first TV, you know, looking at the Samsungs and the LGs and the Sonys that in the store, it's like, man, they really are a cut above the Vizios, but I'm not going to mount two TVs up in my house. I'm only going to have one. There's not going to be another TV right next to it. You notice the same thing when you shop for engagement rings. It's like, oh, this diamond has such unbelievable clarity and the color is so perfect. But, you know, you're not going to have, ideally, your soon to be wife isn't going to be wearing her ring among 10 other ones with all different levels of clarity and color. It's just going to be on her finger. So the idea that you have to have a flawless diamond when it's not going to be next to other diamonds is, you know, silly, like with a TV. So, right. And so just, yeah, don't put your penis right next to other penises in an effort to compare them, and you'll be fine, you know. But now, if your tastes involve, you know, having multiple ones lined up for a woman to pick her favorite, if that's a situation you find yourself in, then maybe you do have a legitimate right to more concern than Dan and I are saying.
Well, maybe not, because there was another study, right? There was another study in here. All right, correct me if I'm wrong, where they had the same man, a picture of a man, and they had three different sized penises, a small, medium, and large, and they were asking the women which man they find most attractive, and the only thing they switched out was the penis size, and the one that won was the middle
average.
One, the average size, not bigger, not smaller, and that's where most of us fall. Is in that range.
That is very true, Dan, but I will disagree with you to say that, again, if you find yourself with a lady who is orchestrating a penis lineup where she gets to pick her favorite, where she goes to the trouble of getting all multiple guys lined up in a room so she can pick out her favorite, she may have a preference in one direction or the other that doesn't line up exactly with these random women that are looking at digitally altered pictures.
Oh, so the Goldilocks rule doesn't apply here?
I don't know. I've never been in that room, so I don't know how it works. I'm just saying that, like we said a second ago, that room must exist, and that must be the thing for some people. But it's not something I can speak directly to because I've never participated. So, all right. So, yeah, the bottom line is, even if you think you have a problem, you're probably still average or really close to it. And two, what you think is a problem for you is probably not going to be a problem for, you know, the right woman when you find her and she's compatible with you. But all that said, I will say this. If you are concerned with your size and you want to know, is there anything you can do about it? There are certainly surgical interventions that I've not heard any that I would recommend by any means. They're all pretty pretty complicated. I mean, once you get into the realm of, okay, I've got erectile dysfunction and it's just not working, then surgery is a different matter than just a elective cosmetic surgery because you don't like that it's not as big as you want. But I will say, if you drop some weight, especially from that sort of padded area right below your belly and above your abdomen, that will have an impact on how things appear down there. And that's probably your easiest bet to transform that area into looking bigger than it currently does, is drop some of that fat from that from below your belly, and things will look better under. Oh, and the other thing is grooming. I am not a person that's gonna, you know, take absolutely everything off down there, but by all means, you know, those same number three or four guard that you're putting on your beard, that's probably a pretty good place to start down there as well. So if it, you know, if it looks like a bird's nest down there, that's going to make the eggs in the nest look smaller.
For sure. Absolutely. The other thing to think about here is what are we really trying to do with our penis for women? It is one piece of the puzzle here. It is really to make them feel good, you know, ultimately to make them orgasm. So, right, that is one piece of this, but remember that women, there's a lot of other things that go into turning a woman on, getting them excited. It is not purely a mechanical thing where, you know, our penis needs to be this length and it needs to go in and out in this fashion. There's so much that leads up to that get the woman excited, get them able to actually have that orgasm. So I really think, you know, the penis size, it's a part of a larger puzzle here that we're going and tool set, if you would, to actually get the woman excited and give her the pleasure that she wants. So there's other areas that we have a lot more control over, you know, in addition to, you know, keeping things clean down there, but, you know, emotionally connecting with that woman beforehand, that comes with being confident. You know, where are you? You know, the foreplay, the other touching and kissing and other, you know, parts of the body that excite the woman, right? It is not purely the penis. So I think we as men overall can start to really relax on worrying about penis size.
Yeah, that brings up a survey I was just recently reading within the last week, that is good information for men to remember. Penis and vagina sex is the easiest way to orgasm for less than a third of women. So less than a third of women, that is the best way for them to have an orgasm. For the other two-thirds, there are other things that are better.
I did not realize that. I mean, in my experience, that it lines up. I never really realized the number was that low. So
yeah,
that should also help kind of take the
pressure off a little bit,
guys.
Yeah,
right, and just kind of make you realize that it's mostly in men's heads that we're concerned. It's not that big of a deal for women. I was full confession for, you know, I watch a lot of Married at First Sight because it's crazy. You know, some of that is crazy to me. And the most recent season, they were actually interviewing different women what they're looking for in a guy. And one of the women was very blunt and said, you know, I'm looking for 7 to 8 inches. And, you know, I was, you know, kind of looked at my girlfriend and we looked at each other and that seemed a little bit large, I thought. And then what's interesting was it was so important to her. That was the first thing she said. And then he interviewed her literally like maybe a couple of weeks later. And then she's like, oh yeah, I need a really large guy. It's 6 to 7 inches. And it was like, okay, well, so even when it's super or supposedly super important, it's not accurate at this point, right? They're not, you know, they don't have a good sense of what measurements actually are. So yeah, I think the rule of thumb here, guys, is take it easy.
And I wonder if, you know, these discussions about size, they almost always center around length and not girth. And I wonder if that's just because it's easier to measure length than girth, because if there is one that's going to have an effect on women, it's going to be, you know, just based on their anatomy, it's going to be girth more than length, but we still always find ourselves talking about length instead, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense other than, you know, it's easier to, you know, whip out a piece of string or a tape measure and lay and we're more familiar with length than we are with girth. So that, yeah, it the whole thing, really, the more time you spend thinking about it, the less sense that it makes that we're spending all this time thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. And it just might come down to what you said. We might have more tools easily available to measure length than girth, right? So, having a basic ruler around or a tape measure is fine, but to get around, to get the circumference, you got to put some effort into it, right? You need to have them be a tape measure. Not everybody has one of those. So yeah, that's really interesting.
Not everybody knows that pi is 22 divided by 7. I mean,
That's a lot of math, dude.
All right. We will stop with that. I hope, in addition to making you uncomfortable, we also gave you some stuff to think about and laugh at. And for our next episode, we will come back to another sort of useless reason to be concerned, which is your age and why you're letting your thoughts about your age get in your way of being the most attractive that you can.
Sounds good, sir.
All right. Talk to you later, Dan.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Thanks for spending some time with us on the Mindfully Masculine podcast. Your ratings and reviews would be much appreciated. And so would your messages at mindfullymasculine@gmail.com. You can also find us on all social media platforms by searching for Mindfully Masculine. We'll talk to you next time. Take care.